Nearly 10 years ago, President Barack Obama said,
"So tonight I'm launching a new precision medicine initiative to bring us closer to curing diseases like cancer and diabetes, and to give all of us access to the personalized information we need to keep ourselves and our families healthier."
We are talking with two of the leaders of this project called All of Us. Our guests are Director of Pediatrics, Dr. Sara Van Driest, and Principal Investigator Katrina Yamazaki. And this is Conversations on Healthcare.
Welcome to both of you to Conversations on Healthcare. So great to see you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, let's start off with Dr. Van Driest. Sarah, we know that All of Us program very well as the initiative selected our community health center as one of your partner organizations, really after a long and very intense review. And of course, we're very proud to be involved, but maybe you could share with the general public a little more about the All of Us project. How does it work and how is it unique?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to share a little bit about the program. So the All of Us research program is led by the National Institutes of Health, and the goal is to change that one-size-fits-all approach to healthcare and to come up with ways to make healthcare personalized or individualized for each individual. One of our goals is to partner with over a million individuals who reflect the diversity of the United States, all 50 states and the U.S. territories. And one of the things that really makes the program unique is that size and that scope and the focus that that really entails. As a researcher, one of the things that my job was before I took this job was to connect the dots, right? The goal of research is to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. With a million participants from across the country, there are so many dots that we'll be able to connect. And it's not focused on one particular disease or one condition, but we want all different kinds of dots on all different kinds of things. That will enable us to make that healthcare more personal, make that healthcare better, really for all.
Well, Sarah, let me pull the thread on that a bit. We hear this statistic a lot. Our DNA is more than 99% the same as everybody else's DNA. So share with our audience why collecting DNA samples from diverse populations is so important. What do we learn by doing that? And I think also define what you mean by diverse.
Yeah, great. So as a again, as a scientist, as a pediatrician, and a little bit of a nerd, I'll share that DNA is like my favorite thing. I love DNA. But as a human being, I think it's just amazing, right? Here's this thing that is so incredibly the same across every person on the whole planet. And yet at the same time, it is absolutely and completely unique for each of us. So the fact that you can have both those things in one, you know, big, giant, beautiful molecule, I think is just fantastic. And so that uniqueness, though, is so very important to what we're doing with the program. Because if we fail to include a group of individuals or an aspect of diversity, then we miss out on that uniqueness. That limits us in what we're able to understand about humanity in general. It also limits researchers in learning about that particular group of individuals. And it limits then downstream how clinicians can care for those individuals and give them the very best possible outcomes. And so if we want to change this one-size-fits-all approach and make it really fit for each individual, we need contributions from each unique individual. And when we think about diversity, we think about it across lots of different dimensions. It's not one thing. It's lots of different aspects. So we think about diversity in terms of your geographic location, your ancestry. We think about it in terms of your socioeconomic status. We think of it in terms of age and your life experiences. So those are just a few of examples of how we think of diversity, and every single piece of that contributes to your uniqueness.
We ask for 1 million individuals to come forward and stand on this landmark in history. We ask America to do, once again, what she has always done, lead the way forward. We're one nation, one people, but all of us are different. And it's those very differences that will lead to answers for generations to come.
Well, speaking of contributions, the federal government has invested $3 billion into the program. And last year, all of us made a pivot to start enrolling children. I'm wondering, why was this needed, and what types of new protocol development and updates to the program's platforms needed to take place to make sure that this was able to happen successfully?
So we know that children are approximately 24% of our population in the U.S., and they are 100% of our future, right? So in order to provide them with the very best care for the future, and again, have them benefit from this amazing resource, we need to include them. Just as we miss out on uniqueness of a group or individuals, that if we leave them out of this opportunity, we miss out on those unique experiences of childhood if we don't include children in the All of Us research program. So it's important to know that the All of Us research program always had a priority of including children in the program, and lots of plans were made since the very beginning, since 10 years ago, and lots of foundational work was done before I even started with the program 2 years ago. But then in 2023, and as you mentioned, we were able to pivot and really focus our attention on pediatric enrollment, because that is a piece that had been missing. And so it was so incredibly fun. Enabling pediatric participation was the number one priority for the program in 2023. And we had to do an enormous amount of work. So anybody who's spent more than a few minutes with a child, whether it be your own or a kiddo next to you in a car, at a restaurant, or on an airplane, you realize that every bit of life is a little bit different for a child. Mm-hmm. And to include them in your experiences, everything has to be a little bit different. And so we were able to thoughtfully take all those plans and implement them and enroll our very first participants from the pediatric age group in our program, starting in the end of 2023 and extending now into 2024. And I'm really proud that one of our pediatric enrollment partners is right there at CHCI.
Well, Katrina Yamazaki, you're the principal investigator here at Community Health Center in Connecticut for the All of Us Project. We know you have a personal story about involving your children with this project. Please share it with our audience, if you will.
Yeah, awesome to be here. So my story and reason why I feel strongly about the pediatric program is my husband and I were fortunate enough to adopt three wonderful boys from the foster system in San Diego. And by adopting them through the system, we don't know a whole lot about their histories and health, their biological families, medical history. And the idea that this program will one day be able to provide some of those missing information to me and my husband in order to become health advocates for our children is really important to me. The little that we do know from them, and the different diseases that do run through their families, we also think it's really important for our children to help with research to try to really understand how some of the mental health disorders that do run through their family, how they come about and things like that. And so it was really personal for me in particular to learn about their health information, as well as be able to contribute to basically the future generations of health.
Isn't that wonderful? Thanks so much. And what a great future they're going to have, knowing much more information about who they are, where they came from. And that's so great. Katrina, there are so many different challenges in enrolling people in medical research. And we also know, looking at the broad work of research, so often it's been limited to a smaller group of people. And like the program says, research should be about all of us, right? And there are many reasons for hesitancy in enrolling people. And now we're trying to enroll children from, as you mentioned earlier, from birth to five. I'm wondering what different approaches that we're taking to make sure that the All of Us effort here is successful.
Yeah, so we have been met with some hesitancy when we were out in the community talking to families about enrolling their children. We've been taking a really hands-on approach to it by partnering with various community-based organizations such as libraries and talking with parents at the children's programming. We have a close partnership with the Hartford Public Library where we are doing educational sessions for children in hope to build trust with the community so they see us on a weekly, monthly basis so that they get to know us and slowly raise awareness of the All of Us Research Program that way. We're also eliciting the help of our staff at the centers. As we all know, they are more comfortable talking to their healthcare providers. So anytime a staff can help us raise awareness of the program, we are definitely working that angle as well. But really just trying to make a fun atmosphere for the kids as, when they approach our tables in the waiting room, showing that we have information for them, as well as bringing the kids in, doing fun activities with them, making them feel included and welcome as we approach them in the waiting room.
There's so many questions that spring forth from this conversation, and I've had the honor of really kind of a bird's eye view of watching the All of Us stations and different sites and seeing the way our wonderful staff interact. And I know the program has put a real priority on making sure staff members also look like all of us and the people who use the healthcare resources. But I'm curious, it seems to require a kind of a fundamental level of health literacy around genetics and also a fair amount of trust in the process, if you will, to talk with adults about enrolling, to say nothing of children. And I'm wondering if you're seeing a difference in terms of the kind of willingness of adults to consider the possibility and sign up to be in the program versus having their kids. How is that shaking out? Or are you tending to see the children of people who are already enrolled and have already crossed that divide?
Yeah, so at least at DHDI, we've been doing a lot of work reaching out to our AOU participants already in terms of adults and seeing if they're interested in enrolling their kids. We've had a lot of success also with enrolling new families into the program where we enroll their parents and the children. A lot of the reasons why the parents that we have been able to engage with over the last year or so is really their willingness to again, help with discoveries and research because they have their own chronic conditions that run through their families that they want to learn more about. Mm-hmm. And I think really being able to contribute to research is what the driving motivation for the adults to enroll themselves as well as their children into the program. And so we're really looking to give back more of that information of how their information is really helping biomedical research in general.
Well, that's great. Sarah, you know, we're proud to be one of the early federally qualified health centers in the program. I think there were five of us, but there are 1,400 community health centers all across the country. They serve a very diverse population, and I know more have joined. But talk about the role, the influence that federally qualified health centers are having on the program. And for those who are contemplating and participating, maybe lay out some reasons that they should embrace this very important program.
Yeah, I'm proud to say that of our five sites right now that are starting out our limited enrollment efforts in the pediatric space, two of them are federally qualified health centers. And that collaboration didn't start with the start of enrollment. It started far before that, where we're able to get the input of people like Katrina and others at the federally qualified health centers to give us input, because those healthcare providers are absolutely experts in how things work at their health centers and what's going on in these families' lives. So things about things like what's an appropriate approach to kids, how can we talk about this research with kids and families, even just workflow kinds of things. One of the fun things we get to do for the pediatric participants is provide them with an item that tells them that we appreciate them contributing to the research. So when they finish their visit with our study staff, they get a toy or a book or those kinds of things. And we ask the sites themselves, what what would be a good thing that would really signify this appreciation that we have for this family and this child coming in and participating with us? And so we didn't pick those things. Our folks at the sites picked those things in order to provide those back. And that was one of the most fun parts of last year, is kind of finding all those items and making sure that they were aligned and that way would approach or be approachable to different groups and different ages. The richness that we're able to provide in terms of an opportunity and that hope looking forward, that, you know, this is what we know today, by contributing a bit of your time to the program, contributing data in the way that you are comfortable with, we can create a better future. We can create a better way of care, and we can only do that with everyone's contributions. We don't want to leave anybody out. In order to do that, we need to partner with great places like our FQHC partners.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sarah, I know if I look back over the arc of the years, the issue of data privacy and protection was huge even then. And if anything, I think probably concerns are even greater about that now, given where we are with technology. I wonder if maybe a two-part question: how does the All of Us project ensure personal information is protected and not shared, leaked, or stolen? And the second is, who does have access to it, even at this point, in terms of being able to use it for research purposes? That I understand is already underway, that certain researchers can access it. Is that right? Tell us about that.
That's right. So first, let me talk about just in broad strokes some of the things that the program does to make sure that the data that people do so graciously give to the program is kept safe. We follow federal, state, and local laws, and there are all of those things in place. We are constantly monitoring those and making sure that we're up to snuff according to the rules. There are some additional things we do, though. However, number one, when people provide us a lot of really rich information about themselves, before we give any of that for a researcher to use, the personal information, anything that could be used to identify that person as an individual, is removed from the data. And so it's anonymized in a way so that their personal information isn't available even to the researchers who are using it. We're continuously monitoring and testing our systems, making sure that all of the, both the privacy controls and our security, are all working the way we intend, and that no one can breach those protocols. And then it's important to know that all the researchers who want to use the data and even the topics that they want to study need to be approved by the program before they can move forward. And so we do have the data available to researchers. It's on a site called the Researcher Workbench. So this is a secure system where researchers can access the data once they've gone through appropriate training and they've been approved to move forward. And then they can use the data in order to answer the questions that they're interested in and then report that out to the rest of the world in order to, again, be able to make healthcare better for all of us.
Are there already reports out, Sarah, based on the data that's been collected so far?
Have we
added?
Absolutely. And so the numbers are pretty amazing, right? So there are about 500,000 adults who have fully participated in the program and have their data available. And each individual gets to choose their level of participation in the program. Those data are available on the Researcher Workbench. We have over 12,000 researchers from across the country who are using that data set now.
Wow.
And this year, 2024, the pace of scientific publications that are coming out in the literature based on this data set is about one new publication every single day.
Wow.
And so it's a remarkable pace, and it's really been picking up now that the data set is large. And let me just comment one other thing is, a lot of people share their electronic health records data, which is a wonderful set of, you know, I talked earlier about connecting the dots. Electronic health records has lots of dots in it that researchers can look at. But those also look backwards in time, right? And so we have adult participants who join the program whose electronic health records go back and look at their adolescence and their childhood. So just one example of a paper that came out recently, researchers looked at individuals who are survivors of cancer who were diagnosed when they were teens or young adults. And so they included individuals who were 15, 16 years old when they were diagnosed with cancer. And then they looked at their long-term outcomes. So these data are already available and people are making some really important contributions to figure out what influences health and how we can make it better.
Sarah, I know in medical research you have to crawl, walk, and then run. But I'm wondering for families who are thinking, who have children who are 6, 7, 8 years old, how long will they have to wait? I'm sure they're anxious. They're hearing this great news about the opportunity to know more about their family members. Is there a time horizon for that next tranche? And it's birth to 5, and then is it 18 and over, and you're sort of got that gap there, or?
Right. So right now, adults can enter the program, and for the folks who can enroll at our 5 partner sites that are active right now, 5 partner organizations that are working with us right now, we're open from birth until that 5th birthday. And we started with that youngest age group so we could follow them the longest. Mm-hmm. But we know that we absolutely can't stop there, right? Our goal is to make enrollment open to all. And so my team is already working on the adaptations to the protocols. Again, if you spend time with kids, you know that being with the 3-year-old is very different than being with the 10-year-old. So we're working on the changes that need to be made to support pediatric participation for the next age group, which will take us up through childhood. And then we'll work on the adolescents. And at that point, we'll be open across all age groups. How fast we're able to move is going to depend on how much funding we're able to use to keep this moving forward.
Well, I have a question maybe for both of you, because I remember as COVID struck and we had to convert so much to telehealth and decrease our in-person contacts, if that set the program back very much. But part two of that question is also in 2020, NIH announced that it would use research materials collected as part of All of Us to learn about and to maybe address or intervene with the COVID pandemic. So, you know, maybe two pieces, two questions. How much did it set you back, the COVID pandemic, in terms of your recruiting efforts? But also, do we have meaningful information that emerged because we had the All of Us project underway that has helped us learn more about COVID and how it affects all of us?
Katrina, did you want to comment at all about your experience during the COVID pandemic? That was before I started with the program. So you have more direct experience with that than I, for sure.
Yeah, I know that I personally wasn't here during that time, but I know that the team had a long way to come after coming out of the pandemic. They pivoted a lot from in-person outreach to on the phone call outreach, almost cold calling. And I know the beginning parts of that was challenging. I'm trying to explain a research program to somebody over the phone instead of seeing them face to face. And I know they had a lot of success with that as more information started to come out and the patients heard more about it. But it did take numerous phone calls to individuals to explain the program. Again, going back to that trust issue on building rapport with the patients on the phone. When we were able to come back in person and do a lot of in-person outreach, we saw that our enrollment numbers on the adult side did increase significantly. So there's something to be said for our staff on the ground in the waiting room for outreach, for sure, for recruitment. Well,
that's great. And I think there are lots of people who are listening to this show right now saying, where do I go to learn more and sign up? So maybe, Katrina, can you take us through the entire process? Maybe how many appointments and how long they are, and so for folks, and as well, how people can find out where they can enroll in a program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for our centers, we have individuals in the waiting rooms at our Hartford location, as well as Meriden in New Britain, and we are starting to slowly open it up to other CHC sites in the next few months. And hopefully we'll be able to meet them in the waiting room. You can visit our website, joinallofus.org/CHCI, for more information as well. We are able to do in-person enrollments to help you with the consents, permissions, and surveys. Usually those appointments take anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, depending on how much we work with the individuals. We are definitely able to help individuals over the phone prior to the appointment so that when they come in person, all we need to do is physical measurements and bioassessments, which is about 30 minutes, a 30-minute appointment.
And I want to go back, if I can, just for a minute to the second half of my question a few moments ago about did we learn anything more about COVID as a country because we had the All of Us project underway? Did we learn anything from our interviews with patients or from biologic specimens that we collected? Anything to report out on that?
Yeah, I think we did learn a lot, and we continue to learn a lot. So for one example, although the All of Us program had just started out when the pandemic had started, we did have biosamples from individuals from late 2019 and early 2020. And when researchers looked at those samples, they were able to show that in at least five different states, the virus that caused the COVID-19 infection was present before anyone thought that was before that. So it actually helped inform the trajectories of how this virus entered our country. We've also, it's not just about the virus, right? It's about the human being who's trying to live through that pandemic. There are a series of surveys that were done. And for example, one group looked at resilience and how resilient people were and how that was associated with depression that was experienced during the pandemic with so much change and stress and uncertainty at that time. And they were able to find the linkages between how much resilience folks had before the pandemic and their experience with depression. And so those are just two of many examples, and we continue to learn more. But really illustrates the power of having this data set already made rather than trying to start something up in the throes of a very difficult situation like a pandemic.
And Sarah, just one last question. Speaking of difficult situations there, and with the backdrop of great achievements of this program, we're also seeing that the program is facing a 71% budget reduction over two fiscal years. This is really quite severe. How do we adjust? What do people need to do to keep this program going forward?
Well, we're encouraging people to have conversations, make sure that the folks around you know about the All of Us research program, know how important it is, and are aware of the ways that it can positively impact health in the future. Certainly for our pediatric work, we're really excited that we have over 150 pediatric participants, but to reach 150,000 pediatric participants, which is what we need to really fuel the research that we hope to achieve, then we need adequate, stable, predictable funding to make that happen. And so we encourage people to continue to have conversations, to continue to reach out, and to stay tuned. And the best way to do that is to stay connected through our researcher newsletters, our participant newsletters, and our websites so that you know what's going on with the program.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Sarah von Driest and Dr. Katrina Yamazaki. And just a reminder to our audience to be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube, find us on Facebook and X with our account name, CHC Radio. And as always, you can go online to chcradio.com to sign up for email updates. And also, please share your thoughts and your comments about the program with us. We love to hear from you. Thanks for joining us. This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.